Okay, I'll call the meeting House Resources to order. And today, House Resources Committee, today is January 26th. We are in room 124 of the Alaska State Capitol. We have the full committee here today, Representative Sadler, Representative Wright, Representative Baker, Representative Rauscher, Representative Mears, Representative Armstrong, Representative Diver, and Representative McCabe, and myself, Chairman Tom McKay. We have a quorum to do business. Our honored guests today are Representative Kronk and Representative Himshute. I want to thank the staff, Zach, Justin, and Ed for helping us run the meeting today. And a reminder to everyone to turn your cell phones on silent. Okay, we'll get started here. The opening, there are two items on today's agenda. We have public testimony on House Bill 243 and House Bill 201. We'll start with House Bill 243 related to bison permitting. I will now bring House Bill 243 related to bison permits back before the House Resources Committee. And we will now open public testimony. Public testimony is now open on House Bill 243. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify first? All right, seeing none, we have three folks online from, it looks like, from Delta Junction. Can you hear me, Don Korberg?
Yes, I can. Loud and clear. Thank you.
Okay, Don, we're going to give everybody 3 minutes to testify. So if you could watch your clock there a little bit, and we'll give you 3 minutes. Please state your name, your affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I thank you for the opportunity to issue my support for House Bill 243. My name is Don Korberg. I've lived in Delta since 1976. I've got about 40 years of interaction with the local Delta Fish and Game Advisory Committee, and I was a member of the Delta Bison Working Group. The Bison Range was created by the legislature in 79 for the purpose to provide adequate forage, water, and shelter for the bison through October of each year to minimize the damage that they cause to private lands, private croplands. In 84, the legislature increased the fee for applying for a bison permit by $5. The additional money was intended to supplement, not replace, the current ADF&G budget for developing the bison range. A representative from the ADF&G Commissioner's Office attended one of those hearings, and I was listening to it at this office right here. And the legislature expressed the intent that additional $5 be used to develop the bison range. The Commissioner's Office responded by commenting that if that really was the intent of the legislature, they would honor it. At the time, there were about 10,000 applicants for a bison permit, so that generated $50,000 a year for use on the bison range. In 2017, the Board of Game increased the number of applications a person could submit for a hunting tag from 1 to 6 per species. That resulted in an increase in the number of applicants to 44,000 or more for a Delta bison. This generated approximately $220,000 or more dollars for the bison range. However, Fish and Game has continued to fund the bison range development or maintenance budget at $50,000 a year, which happened back in 84. Accounting for inflation today, that's about 36% of what they were doing in 84. There has never been any accountability of the missing $170,000 from the permit fees. The ADF&G Bison Range Manager, when asked if he could do more with additional funding, stated that he was only one person and could not possibly do any more improvements to the bison range. In addition, he stated that we are not farmers, as if to explain why the bison range was such a failure. The bison only stay on the range currently for about a month. They show up in early July, and by August, they're already over on the farmland. Therefore, the current actions of the Fish and Game is absconding with the bulk of the hunter-generated funding for the bison range and failing to account for the expenditure of those funds is totally unacceptable. I wholeheartedly support 243. Thank you. Did I make it?
Hey, thank you, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Korberg. I didn't catch your last comment, but I'll ask about it later. Yeah, you did, Don. Thanks, Don. Okay, Mr. Vernon Ayton?
Vernon Ayton.
Ayton, did I say that correctly?
That's correct.
Okay, Vernon, please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Okay. I've been a Delta resident for 30 of my 50 years in Alaska, and I've served on the Delta Fish and Game Advisory Committee for over 20 years, with much of that time involved in the 40-mile caribou management team. I'm also a past president of Delta Sportsmen's Association. And thank you for the opportunity to voice my opinion in support of our Delta Bison. And I'd like to start my testimony with the bottom line for a change. The bottom line being that hunters have woefully paid additional money to help the bison, and they did not get what they paid for. The Fish and Game website clearly stated that the additional $5 was to support the Delta Bison Range, but when some of us challenged Fish and Game, that statement was quickly removed from the website, but the $5 was not removed from the application fee. The exact amount of funds not properly applied to the Bison Range will probably never be known, but I feel if those funds and the 3-to-1 matching Pittman-Robertson funds had been spent as intended, conditions for the bison would be much improved. A few years ago, Fish and Game had to return over $1 million to Pittman-Robertson because they couldn't utilize it. That hurts. I'm in favor of creating a Delta Bison Oversight Committee, but not under the auspices of ADF&G. The previous Delta Bison Working Group disbanded after completion with the agreement the Delta Bison herd would have a management goal of 300 head pre-calving. Without notifying the Delta Advisory Committee, Fish and Game allowed the herd to increase by over 200 head, perhaps as high as 400 head. Nobody knows. Without increasing the enhancement of the bison range for the increased herd size. I'm also in favor of a contingency plan for feeding the bison should it ever be needed, but I believe the Soil Water District is far better prepared to deal with that situation as they know the hay producers and can quickly arrange for procurement and transport. They have ag specialists, engineers, biologists, ecologists, and equipment operators available, and they are willing to help without fee for the Delta Bison Range. Thank you for your time, and I wholeheartedly support this bill, 243. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ayton. Next is Tisha Cannell. Tisha, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, sir. Tisha Cannell.
Okay, Tisha, please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Tisha Kennel, and I am from Delta Junction and moved here in 2010. I'm currently serving as the advisory committee chair. I'm the chair of the Ducks Unlimited for this area and have held positions with Delta Sportsmen's Association, but today I'm here as a concerned citizen of Delta. Since I've been in Delta Junction, I have witnessed a disturbing amount of incompetence and lack of ethics within the ADF&G in our area. One example of this is how the local bison herd and the bison range have been mismanaged. The original legislative intent of the extra $5 placed on the bison draw permit was to maintain the Delta Bison Range. This was clearly stated on the ADF&G website until this matter came into question, and it was recently removed from the site. It was also clearly understood by the local residents and those paying the extra $5 when entering the draw. Since this additional fee was included, it has raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, a fraction of which has gone towards maintaining the bison range. In essence, the department has stolen this money from this community and has used it for purposes other than what they had promised. During the winter of 21 to 22, when the bison range manager was asked if he needed more funding, he stated no, that he wouldn't know what to do with it, and that he was not a farmer, which clearly indicated that Mr. Cooper was not the most qualified person for this position, and our bison range has suffered due to these factors. I find it a travesty that we lost over 200 bison to starvation during the winter of 21 to 22. The first mistake by the department was not managing the herd at 360 head pre-calving. The second was to refuse to feed them in this extraordinarily bad winter. Colorado, Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming, to name a few of the other states, have all developed and are practicing successful feeding programs during this types of winter. Imagine how many freezers over 200 bison would have filled, not to mention the fact that we lost a large portion of the calves that year due to malnutrition. Since that time, a few of the local residents have come together to remove this project from ADF&G and have it contracted out in order to provide better habitat for this herd. We have done this because we do not trust ADF&G to manage our wildlife, especially the bison, or our funding, as they have demonstrated that they are far from trustworthy in this situation. The Delta Junction residents have lost all confidence in the ADF&G and of the Board of Game and created a plan that we know will better serve our wildlife in general, but especially the bison. This project does not involve the department and they will receive no funding from it. This should be a loud message to everyone listening today. If you have further questions about our concerns with our local department, please take the time to listen to our AC meetings recording online. That being said, I wholeheartedly support House Bill 243. If ADF&G is not going to use the money as they stated that they would originally that they had originally agreed, then they should not receive those funds. I further support a Pittman Robertson match of the funds already secured for the Bison Range project, as this project will secure this particular source of food security for the Alaskans. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Kennel. That ends our list of public testifiers, but I can't help but ask a couple questions. If I owned a bison range and I had $100,000, what would I do with that to specifically support the bison range? I'd like to know would you plant hay? Would you put up fences? What would you do? You all mentioned support the bison range more than one time. What does that entail?
This is Don.
Don?
This is Don Corbin. Thank you. I'll attempt to answer that. If I had $100,000, well, let's back up just for a second. There are 90,000 acres that was granted to them to manage for the bison range. The legislature gave them $1.54 million, which resulted in 3,000 acres being cleared. It's a kind of a monoculture black spruce forest out there. And they developed some of that, but a lot of it is even growing back into brush because they're not maintaining even the 3,000 acres. I would put that all to the production of perennial grasses, which is what they graze on. That would be my primary objective.
And
okay.
Get the Pittman Robertson for the 100,000.
Quick comment.
With that $100,000 and applying for the Pittman Robertson tax money that comes from the sale of firearms and ammunition, that $100,000 could be easily pushed up to $400,000. And look at the amount of crops that could be produced with that.
Okay, I got a little better idea then. Can you, in a couple sentences, tell us what Pittman Robertson is?
It's a sales tax of 11% on the sale of rifles and firearms and ammunition that goes back to game management.
Is that statewide in Alaska?
Nationwide.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. Okay. I'm glad I asked. Okay. Representative McCabe.
Interestingly, if I remember right, that Pittman Robertson, if a state doesn't use it, then it can come to
a... To what?
Letting know that's correct. That's correct. If we don't use those funds, we will lose those funds.
Right.
So we did.
You have to use them, and you can even get more if you need them from other states that haven't used them. So it's a really decent project that's funded by a guns and ammo sale.
Okay. Do you have a question?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Anyone else have a question for our public testifiers?
I would just like to thank you.
Oh, okay. Well, Representative Sadler has a question.
Thank you. So through the chair, and I'm not sure who of our three testifiers might answer. We had Commissioner Vince Lang in last time we met on Wednesday, and he seemed to accede to the desire to reconvene the working group. And I just wonder if you three believe that would be a sufficient response to the situation that we've heard so well explained.
Did you hear that?
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead, Tom.
I think we're all in agreement that we need to have some sort of an advisory capacity over what Fish and Game is doing currently on the Bison Range. I don't know if we need to have Fish and Game in charge of that. That's what we had last time, and you wind up with too many people that have no dog in the fight. But what that means is they don't live here, so all they want is more bison at anybody else's expense other than their own. We need to have a kind of a local advisory committee that could help them generate some forage on that land and try to mitigate the predation that's occurring across the road on the private land.
If I could follow up.
Okay, follow up, Representative Sandler.
Thank you. And through the chair, and I apologize that I can't refer to my notes quickly enough. I'm not sure which working group the commissioner was saying he thought that there would need to be reconvened. And so who could speak to what that advisory group was? And it sounds like there is agreement that that working group would not be sufficient to address your local concerns. Is that fair?
Partially. I was on that Delta Bison working group, and there was about 11 or 12. And I mean, we had basically this seashore snail watcher from Key West, Florida. You know, why are they on there? I have no idea. And so it became kind of a boggled mess. But what we did is basically try to reach a consensus on the activities that the Fish and Game Department would take in managing the bison and the bison range. And that's been lost when they disbanded. Now they rewrite the plan any way they want. There's nobody to look at it to say whether we're pretty sure this won't work, or this, you should channel your efforts into this type of activity. They're just loose, running loose. That's it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Aton. I think I had that correct. The first answer was from Don Korberg, and the second answer was from Vernon Aton. Is that correct?
This is Don Korberg, and I was the one that was just speaking about that advisory.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Don. Okay. We're trying to get it straight for the record. So Don Korberg has been answering all the questions so far. So if we could wrap this up, one more, Representative Sadler.
And just to make the record clear, I think I hear from, with no objection from any three of you, that the working group reconvening is not a solution to your concerns, or it is? Please be clear.
We think it is. It would be if it was under the guidance of anybody other than the Fish and Game Administration.
Thank you.
Okay, and that's Don Korberg.
Can I answer?
Excuse me. The way we're supposed to do this is every time you speak, you put your name on the record. So please proceed, Tisha.
Sir, this is Tisha Kennel. To add to what he's saying, there have been concerns since we have started this project about how the money what kind of oversight will be on this money to make sure that it's being spent properly and that this range is being managed properly from the citizens. And so what I think they're saying is that they want to have oversight from the citizens outside of Fish and Game to have an appropriate assembly of people who are knowledgeable about things like wildlife, Pittman Robinson, agriculture, things like that, to come together on that committee to have oversight over those funds and the bison range.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Kennel. Representative Baker has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I've made comment on this subject before, but I highly urge the representative from Tok and anyone else listening involved with this bison herd to look into the Western Arc Caribou Herd Working Group, its creation and its management, as it is essentially the kind of body that the testifiers today have spoken to, where it's made up of members of the community, members of the user groups of the Western Arc Caribou Herd. They receive input from Fish and Game, from federal bodies, but it is made up of the people who rely upon the animals. So I highly urge that any interest in that be looked up for the Western Arc Caribou Herd Working Group for a similar solution to your problems.
Okay, thank you for that, Representative Baker. Are there any other questions? And Representative Rauscher would like to make a closing statement.
I just appreciate the fact that you guys took time to come forward and testify for us, boots on the ground, people in the community, a better understanding of what we've been up against with this, with the bison herd, the bison situation down there, how we can move forward. We appreciate the fact that we, each one of you had at least acknowledged your position on the bill And I can say that we did ask the commissioner, and he responded with a yes, I'll get the information for you. The question was, where has the money been spent over the years? And the commissioner did say he would get that information. So when we get the information, I'll pass it on to you all down there as well. Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to thank the three individuals taking time out from their day in Delta Junction today to testify. Thank you very much. And is there anyone else wanting to testify, both here in the room or online? Okay, seeing none, I will now close public testimony on House Bill 243, and we will set the bill aside. Please submit any amendments to my office by noon on Monday, January 29th, and we will hold House Bill 243 in committee until our next meeting. Thank you, Representative Kronk and Mr. Stancliffe. Okay, we will now move to House Bill 201, and we'll bring the House Bill 201 back. It's regarding residency requirements for hunting and fishing licenses. And if Representative Himshue, you maybe want to come forward and be available for questions. And we will now open public testimony for House Bill 201. Public testimony is now open for House Bill 201. Firstly, is there anyone in the room that wants to testify on House Bill 201? Okay, seeing none, we will now move to folks on the line. And the first person is David Eggleston. Eggleston. David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, David, calling in from Thorn Bay. Let's go 2 minutes on your testimony. Please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Well, thank you for allowing me the time to add my comments regarding 201. My name is David Eggleston. I'm a resident of Thorn Bay on Prince of Wales Island. I'm a retired colonel from the New York State Environmental Conservation Police and a former New York State trooper. I spent over 30 years in law enforcement enforcing state and federal laws and regulations, mainly fish and wildlife and environmental statutes. I'm a member of the East Prince of Wales Advisory Committee. I have extensive experience enforcing laws as well as writing and or critiquing them while in the legislative process. I fully support HB 201 and am grateful to Representative Hensuth and her staff for their work to get this bill in front of them. You have heard many reasons why this bill is important, but let me give you some specifics from Thorn Bay. A couple of years ago, a few of us went through the resident sporting license sales for communities on Prince of Wales Island. In our small second-class city, approximately 5% of the supposed residents who purchased that type of license were not legal residents. Most of them were in town for between 2 and 4 months each year at the most. Some of them would travel back and forth to their out-of-state homes during the summer, and none of them owned a snow shovel in Alaska. They all had their real jobs and homes in the lower 48. A few had fishing lodges here in Alaska. And one might think that this is not a big deal, but it's way down in the southeast. But you should know that some of these fake residents also go north regularly and hunt caribou, sheep, goats, and brown bear. Their activities are not limited to the panhandle. Undoubtedly, the situation is found statewide in other areas popular to fishing and hunting. I've only lived in Alaska for 12 years, but it is my home until I don't need one anymore. I dealt with non-resident issues in my law enforcement career and thought I was done with it when I was fired. I'm dealing with it again because I have a strong belief that the resources are very important to all of us residents. I believe that our fish and wildlife should first feed us before we share them with outsiders. When we do allow non-residents to partake in the harvest of our resources, they should be following our rules and respecting our ways. They should pay for the privilege as we pay as non-residents in other states. This bill will not change the residency status of Kern, Alaska. They may retire and become snowbirds. As long as they maintain their requirements for TFP, they remain residents. They may leave the state for 6 months and remain residents. They may leave for even longer periods if they meet the requirements found in AS 43.23.008.
Okay, David, please wrap it up, okay?
Okay, here it comes. There should be no gray area when it comes to residency. We may not be able to force people to act ethically, but we can charge those who unethically play the system. Please move this bill and give our wildlife troopers, prosecutors in the courts an easier and quicker way to prosecute those who cheat the system. Not only will we be...
Okay, thank you, David. Just can't keep going and going and going. Okay, I'll now go to the LIOs for people who have traveled. Stuart Eddy in Petersburg. Can you hear me, Stuart?
Yes, sir. Hello, my name is Stuart Eddy. I'm representing myself. My wife and I are both fourth-generation Alaskans, currently raising the fifth. I'm a commercial fisherman as well as a hunting guide. Today I'm writing in support of HB 201, an act changing the residence requirements for hunting, trapping, and sport fishing privileges. The resources of our state are valuable to those that permanently live here. We rely on these vital resources to help offset the increasing cost of raising a family in Alaska. Utilizing the same standards for hunting, fishing, trapping licenses as those requirements to qualify for a permanent fund creates consistency and clarity. The current resident requirements for hunting, trapping, and fishing are too lenient, and our resources are being taken advantage of by those only wanting to take and not give back. The state is losing money not only on license and tag fees, but also the money received through the Pittman-Robertson and the Dingell-Johnson Act. HB 201 would give law enforcement a great tool in stopping those wanting to take advantage of our fish and game resource. In addition, it will prioritize our fish and wildlife resources for the people who truly depend on them over individuals' personal interests. This update to the resident requirements should have been established long ago. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, Stuart. I appreciate your testimony. Now I'll go to Kent Barkow. I hope I said that right. Kent, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. You said it correctly. Kent Barkow here.
Okay, Kent.
I want to speak in real favor of House Bill 201. You know, the way I look at it, my privileges as a resident, a 44-year resident, but as a resident for fishing game and trapping is, a lot more valuable to me than the permanent fund. I think that the requirements for those privileges to hunt and fish should require at least the same residency requirements as the permanent fund. And as House Bill 201 proposes, using the system that's already up and running and works for the permanent fund to also provide that framework for enforcement of residency requirements for fish and game only makes sense. And so, you know, we see abuses and, you know, I'd like to get rid of those abuses and protect the privileges for those who really are here. And so I support House Bill 201 wholeheartedly, as well as the Sitka AC last week also voted in support of House Bill 201. Thank you for the privilege of speaking.
Okay, Kent. Kent, one question. You mentioned the Sitka, I think it was AC. Who is that?
Well, the Sitka Advisory, Fish and Game Advisory Committee.
Advisory Committee, okay. I just wanted to clarify that's the Sitka Advisory Committee. Okay, thank you for that, Kent.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, next I have Jake Combs. Jake, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
You may have to speak up, Jay. Can't hardly hear you.
How about now? Can you hear me?
Yeah, as loud as you can go, please, Jake. And please state your name and begin your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representatives, Jake Combs from Tok, Alaska. I've been on the Upper 10 and 40 Mile AC for some time. I'm the vice chair, but this is my personal statement. I fully support and agree with the current draft of House Bill 201. With more people and better technology and generally less resources in the state than in the past, I think this is a good vital time to make sure we ensure that people that reside here are going to continue to have resources they need. And I feel that people to match the PFD is not a lot to ask. 6 months continue or living here for 6 months a year is a fairly low standard in my opinion. Someone may have to endure maybe 30 days in non-optimum summertime type weather temperatures, maybe a little more. That's just not a big deal to gain the privileges, the hunting and fishing privileges that a resident can have up here in the state. And I do feel that the privileges of the hunting and fishing far outweigh the benefits of the PFD, which, you know, has a mechanism to ensure that people are actually spending the time here and living here. The monetary loss for the state and gain for the individual is somewhat hard to quantify, but in my mind, a single moose hunt for a non-resident, they roughly pay $1,200 in license and fees. And that seems to be a fairly average PFD payment. And so that's a one-species hunt for one person. And that doesn't take in any other species, second-degree kindred, or any other benefits that way. So, again, the monetary value, I think, for the hunting and fishing exceeds the PFD, which why does the PFD have a mechanism for protection, but the hunting and fishing doesn't. Bottom line, I don't think the state should allow a system that allows its resources to be used or taken out of the state for free by people that do not actually live and reside in Alaska the majority of the time. I think House Bill 201 is good for us Alaskans, of the residents of Alaska and the state itself.
Okay, thank you, Jake.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks for your testimony, Jake. Okay, now we go to Jim Brennan. Jim Brennan, Sitka. Can you hear me, Jim?
I can.
Okay, Jim, please state your name and your affiliation for the record and begin your testimony. 2 minutes, please.
2 minutes? Okay, this is Jim Brennan, and I'm speaking for myself. I oppose HB 201. I understand the purpose of it, but I think the abuses that it's concerned with can be dealt with in other ways. The bill basically penalizes bona fide residents such as myself. Permanent fund dividend eligibility is not the same as residency. Residency for all other purposes in Alaska requires that the state of Alaska be your domicile, your intended place where you go to for home, which continues to be the case for me. I am a lifelong 74-year Alaska resident, third generation. I grew up in Petersburg, always worked in Alaska, first as a commercial fisherman, and later as an Anchorage attorney, where I practiced for 40 years before retiring in 2017. At that time, I purchased a house in Port Townsend in Washington, but I maintain a house in Baranoff, Warm Springs, in the Sitka Borough, where we reside for 4 months per year. We vote in Sitka. We pay property taxes there. We maintain Alaska driver's licenses, our vehicles, our Alaska license plates. I keep a boat in Alaska. We are domiciled in Sitka Borough, which is our permanent residence. Since 2017, we have not been eligible for the permanent fund dividend, which is fine. I realize that there's reasons to have stricter requirements for residency for that. I don't believe in the whole program anyway, so I don't mind losing that money. I hold a permanent fishing license, which I received while I was still living in Anchorage. We do not seek any residency requirements from another state. For example, we don't get exemptions from property taxes here in the state of Washington because of our age. Like many Americans who move around, we are not in our home state for 6 months a year. It's nevertheless our domicile where we plan to return. We regard ourselves as Alaskans, at least as much as the people that have testified online here. There are better ways to address the situation of vacationing Prince of Wales fishermen who were the source of this legislation. There are better ways than to cut off the rights of bona fide residents.
Okay, Jim, can you wrap it up?
I'll stop right now. Thank you, sir.
Well, all right then. Sorry about that, but I have to keep.
That's okay.
I got to keep a clock, unfortunately.
Okay,
thank you, Jim, for your testimony. Mr. Tad Fujioka, I don't know if I said that right or not. Tad, can you hear me all right?
Yes, this is Tad Fujioka. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Please state your full name, your affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Okay, thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Tad Fujioka. I live in Sitka. I am the current secretary of the Sitka Fish and Game Advisory Committee, about a 17-year member of that committee, and a fourth-generation Alaskan. As Mr. Barkow mentioned earlier, we met actually twice to discuss HB 201 and strongly supported it. We were among the reasons for that was that told the wildlife troopers supported the bill because it would simplify enforcement for them. And we were told that the Native and G commissioner supports the bill because the non-resident licenses raise more revenue for department than residents. We think that it's a good step to cut down on some of the abuses that we see happening here and are more visible in other smaller communities. If you feel that this bill is inappropriate, pointed out that another way that we could address this issue would be if the legislature were to provide the reinstatement of the state income tax. So that would probably also cut down a lot of these pseudo-residents. But since that's probably a much bigger lift than you're willing to tackle today, I urge you to support HB 201. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Tad. Representative Sadler has a quick question for you, Tad, if you could hold on.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Fujioka, just curious, you said, were you speaking on your own behalf or were you representing the deliberate views of the advisory committee?
I was not directed to by the advisory committee to speak on this, so I guess I was just speaking for myself, but those were points of view brought up at the advisory committee meeting.
Great. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Tad. Okay. Next, we have Lewis Hyatt. Lewis from Hollis. Hollis, Alaska? Lewis, can you hear me?
Good afternoon. Okay. Yes, I can. Thank you. You have me?
Yeah, please, Lewis, state your full name, your affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Lewis Hyatt. I'm calling to voice my support for HB 201. I've lived in Alaska for 53 years, the last 40 in Hollis on Prince of Wales Island. I am currently a member of the East Prince of Wales Advisory Committee, and I'm also an alternate to the Regional Federal RAC Board. I recently retired from the North Slope. The current resident fish and game license requirements seem to be very ambiguous and provide little consequence for false residency claims. I believe clarity is needed. For example, on our island, there is a local couple from California that vacations on Prince of Wales each summer, spends their time catching our local fish, crab, shrimp, all the while claiming Alaska resident status. They take advantage of our generous rural residence subsistence and personal use bag limits. They set a subsistence halibut long line each time a friend visits and send them home with box upon box of Alaskan fish. This is just one example of many of our summer vacationers. My children, born and raised here, grew up relying on our natural resources and what this land can provide. They all continue to live and work in Alaska, still relying on these resources to feed now their growing families. My concern is, as these resources decline, who is going to have priority, the two residents or the summer vacationers? I strongly support passage of this legislation and would like to offer my sincere thanks to Representative Himshute for her hard work. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Lewis, very much for your testimony. Next, we have Paul Johnson from Gull Cove. Paul, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can, and thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, Paul, please just state your full name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Paul E. Johnson. I live between Juneau and Gull Cove in northern southeast Alaska. Members, I'm a territorial baby. My family's at the dinner table when I was a young man. We're excited about statehood. We were thrilled at the opportunity not only to manage our own fisheries, to get more economic opportunity of them than people from the outside. We did a lot of things at that point in time. We changed seine boat limits to 58-foot max. We got rid of drum seining, a whole litany of things that provided better times for those who lived in Alaska year-round. So as I go through this, along came also, it was just mentioned on personal use and subsistence, and we're seeing in our area right now, there's six people in Elfin Cove. There's well over 100 claimed residency. I guess I looked also at what came down in Anoka. And those resident requirements get a leg up after Glacier Bay was closed to mining and other items. You got to remember that Senator Stevens put in there in 1307 that if you lived in an area, you got a leg up. People are jumping through this loophole to use and claim residency on those prospectus bids to get opportunities also on federal lands. With that, I'm a 72-year-old gentleman who, I don't know if I'm a gentleman or not, but when I'm 72 years old, I still buy my hunting and fishing license so that the state does get the matching federal funds. With that, I'll let it go, and I appreciate Representative Himshute on providing this opportunity. It's been in my mind for a long time. So I hope it moves forward. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you, Paul. And from our point of view, you're definitely a gentleman. So thanks for your testimony. Next, we have Matt Beck. Matt from Whale Pass. Can you hear me, Matt? Matt Beck. Can you hear me, Matt? Okay, let's go to the next guy.
Yes.
Oh, there you are. Yeah, Matt, yeah. Can you hear me all right, Matt Beck?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, Matt, please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
So my name is Matt Beck. I live on Prince Whale Island in Whale Pass. I'm a member of the East POW Advisory Committee, but I'm really representing myself. I've been here almost 5 years now, and I've enjoyed Alaska from the beginning. The year we moved here, we bought our hunting and fishing license because we didn't qualify for a resident. Then we purchased a locking tag for a black-tailed deer as well. We didn't expect any special treatment until we had earned it. Following year, I was able to purchase a hunting and fishing license as a resident. I also got free use timber, and then registered for our PFT and waited for the following year to receive it. Point is that the state has guidelines for all of these programs, and it's important that we all respect them and not try and find the loopholes around them. You've heard from many that vacationers come up here primarily for the summer months and are depleting our resources as they are intended for year-round residents, and I agree with House Bill 201. As you folks that we're addressing today represent Alaskans, I'd hope you would take into account the skyrocketing cost of food we're facing. When I see hamburger well over $5 a pound, a loaf of bread in that same price range, and a pound of private label oatmeal over $6 a container, I would hope you'd realize how expensive it is to feed a family. The fish and game that year-round Alaskan residents harvest offset those food budgets. But when these resources become more difficult to get, it only drives the cost up for their families. These families are who live here, raise it, educate their children, and they're to help their neighbors when they need it year-round. You've been placed in office by these folks to represent them and protect their lifestyle. I'm asking you to move this bill forward and help the greater need of Alaskans and not the entitled. And as it's been stated earlier, the Pittman-Roberts Act, for every dollar spent on hunting and fishing license, is a 3-to-1 return for the state, which would receive additional funds for Alaska Fish and Game.
Okay, thank you, Matt.
Appreciate the support. You bet.
Okay. Sorry, I have to keep a pretty tight time limit. So thank you for your testimony, Matt. Next, we have Chet Powell. Chet, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, Chet, please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Name is Chet Powell, and I live in Craig, Alaska, west side of Prince Wales Island. Chairman and committee members, I would just like to voice my support to move ahead with Bill 201. We just see a lot of abuse of it. The residency requirement for residents is not that hard to keep. I'd like to mirror it with the permanent fund. I also do, as a lifelong resident of Southeast Alaska, I do also carry a permanent fishing hunting license. I think they need to take a hard look at that also. If this bill moves ahead, there are a lot of people that have those cards that do not live here but can still utilize that card, because at that point they don't need to go in and get a new hunting fishing license. It'd be something as simple as, on my driver's license I have restrictions, or a motorcycle endorsement, or I give up an eye issue or whatever, but it could be something so simple for fish and game. This needs to be easier for fish and game enforcement issues. So that's really all I have. I could go on all day about it, and I don't want to do that. But I would encourage you to move ahead on House 201, and I thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you very much, Chet. I appreciate it. Next, I have Joey Edmonds. Joey, can you hear me? Yeah, Joey Edmonds. Can you hear me, Joey? Come in, Joey.
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Now I can, yeah. So, Joey Edmonds, please state your name, your affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Joey Edmonds. I have no affiliation. I'm just calling as a private citizen of the state of Alaska, and I just want to voice my support for House Bill 201. I believe that the current requirements for proving residency for the purpose of hunting, fishing, and trapping in Alaska should be stricter. Making the requirements more like those in place for receiving a PFD makes sense, since it's been very effective. Right now, the lax guidelines for proving residency allows people who are not residents but who like to frequent Alaska to subsistence hunt and fish, putting greater pressure on the limited resources available for residents of Alaska. This gives actual Alaskans more competition when it comes to subsistence hunting and fishing. In my opinion, allowing non-residents to pay the reduced license fees that residents pay also drastically reduces the potential revenue for the Department of Fish and Game. I believe that properly categorizing non-residents and making them follow the non-resident bag limits will also reduce pressure on these valuable resources that we Alaskans have come to value. And that's it.
Okay. Okay, Joey, thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it. Thomas Harden, can you hear me, Thomas?
Yes.
Okay, Thomas Harden, please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Thomas Harden. I live in Hollis, Alaska on Prince of Wales Island. And I just here as a concerned citizen representing myself today, and want to voice my support for House Bill 201. And it just makes a lot of sense to have a mechanism in place for all resident privileges. Should all have the same standards, the same measuring stick. And using the permanent fund guidelines for that makes a lot of sense, and gives a lot of support to law enforcement so they can better deal with these abuses here in our small community. We have people who have small lodges or are transient workers. They come here for short periods of time and work. They also put out skate lines and crab pots, and they, when they go home from work to another state, they take all kinds of seafood with them, and they have, you know, resident hunting and fishing license. They have no intention of ever living here permanently. And people with lodges, they use those same privileges that they don't really have to get seafood and that they turn around and sell in their lodges. And there's a lot of that goes on, and it's pretty open, and having a system in place that has a higher standard would be very beneficial to the resources and the people of Alaska. And as license fees do create income for the state, on their own, and with the benefits from Pittman-Robertson funds. Pittman-Robertson has been around since 1937, so this is no new thing. It's a tax that sportsmen put on themselves, and it raises a lot of money for conservation issues. That's all I have to say today. Thank you for the privilege, and thank you to Representative Hemshoot for bringing this matter before us.
Okay, thank you very much, Thomas. Appreciate your testimony. Next, we have Sean Davis. Sean, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Sean, please state your name, your affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Hey, thanks for your time. My name is Sean Davis. I'm just calling in this time as a 40-year concerned Alaska resident. I'm in full support of House Bill 201, and I think with more and more people in Alaska every year participating in the harvest of the state's resources, it's now a crucial time to take the measures to ensure that people that actually live and work in Alaska have access to the resources they deserve. I also feel that 180 days a year in the state is a low threshold to set, but we need to start somewhere. And also mirroring the state's PFD guidelines gives us an added benefit to a system already in place to help prove this compliance. Once again, I just want to state that I'm in full support of House Bill 201, and thank you for your time.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sean. We appreciate your testimony. Kevin Castle, can you hear me, Kevin?
Yes, I can.
Okay, Kevin, please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
My name's Kevin Castle. I'm representing myself, but I live in Craig here. Also, sounds like a lot of other Prince of Wales folks have called in, but yeah, I just I am full support of this, long overdue. Craig, like a lot of communities on Prince of Wales, have really changed over the last 10, 15, 20 years. A lot more summer folks coming up, staying for sometimes just 1 or 2 months, setting skates. You look at the trucks with the freezers full of filleted fish heading out in the fall. It just shows that something needs to be done because it can't withstand this pressure. So hopefully with a little more restrictive residence requirements, something can start to be done with this. But anyway, I just wanted to, nothing new from what the rest of the folks that support this have said, but I'm pretty happy this is being done. Hopefully it'll pass, and thank you very much for your time.
Okay, great. Thank you, Kevin. We appreciate your testimony very much. Next, we have Dennis Nickerson from Klawak. Dennis, it looks like you're representing an organization. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, Dennis, please state your name and your complete affiliation and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Dennis Nickerson. I am the tribal president for Klawak Cooperative Association Tribe, and I am also the chairperson for the Klawak Fish and Game Advisory Committee. We support House Bill 201, specifically the requirements to obtain Alaska sport fish hunt and trap license. Cutting the supply line will roll the red carpet back from seasonal residents, reaping the benefits that Alaska provides when it comes to our precious natural resources. Alaskans work together, making it through our winters, keeping roads open and electricity to our homes. Our rightful harvest of Alaska resources has been threatened by these seasonal residents. The result is year-long Alaskan residents being blamed for over-harvest. True Alaska Natives and Alaskans live a way of life that's existed for thousands of years. This was only made possible by Indigenous commerce and stewardship. A balanced approach to harvest and protection assured we have plentiful resources for generations. Today, that tradition continues. This allows us to harvest food throughout the year. It increases our physical activity and strengthens our family bond. Our tribal membership harvests for those in need as well as for our kumik, or traditional ceremonies. We also continue the barter system, which helps homes have an array of resources. Prince of Wales Island's location makes it an easy target for these so-called Alaskans to land and begin fishing and hunting like there's no tomorrow. We see them all over our island communities, and food security is as high as it's ever been. I was born and raised in Klawak, and I watched the transition of abundant natural resources like salmon reduced to a fraction of what they used to be. We end up spending more time fishing and hunting to fill our freezers and spirits. House Bill 201 will provide an increase in funding for protection and enforcement of our natural resources. This can make even more isolated locations easier to monitor. This can also greatly improve management of Alaska's natural resources, and I thank Representative Hinshuk for introducing House Bill 201. This is a good investment for Alaskans for generations to come. Again, thank you all for your time.
Okay, Dennis, thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it very much. Okay, next I have Larry Rivers. Larry, can you hear me okay?
Hello?
Yeah, Larry.
Yes, I'm on.
Okay, Larry, please state your full name, your affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Okay, my name is Larry Rivers. I'm from Talkeetna, Alaska, and I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I'm Alaska resident now for 53 years, a licensed guide for 50 of those years, so I'm retired. My wife was born in the territory and raised in Platte, Alaska. 5 kids, all born in Alaska, all raised here. So I'm in support of House Bill 201. The reason is that the residency requirement is way too loose and way too poorly enforced. I've personally seen so much abuse, people claiming they were residents, simply having been up here for a month or two in the summer, and get a post office box and a driver's license, and then come back year after year and hunt as a resident. It's just absolute abuse. On the Kenai, specifically the Kenai River, I've seen people claiming to be residents go in and take 2 and 3 personal use limits, freeze it, and ship it back home. Unfortunately, they weren't caught. But anyway, as a result of this, I think 6 months is way too lenient. People should have to be here 8 or 10. So I am in support of House Bill 201. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Larry. We appreciate your testimony very much. So finally, we have Ellen Hannon. Ellen, can you hear me? Ellen Hannon?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now, Ellen. Okay. Please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
My name is Ellen Hannon.
I'm a resident of Craig. I am representing myself, but I'm also a member and chairperson of the Craig Fish and Game Advisory Council. I would like to say that I'm a lifelong Alaskan and a 42-year resident of Craig. I think the advantage of House Bill 201 is it's a proven way to in the legal system of the PFD requirements for residency that might help avoid the loopholes that we're seeing of fish and game license residency requirements. I've heard a lot of testimony today, so I'm going to keep mine short. What we see in our area, once these people become established as state residents, they use that to then go ahead and establish federal residency as a federally qualified user. So that allows them lots of privileges throughout the state for fishing and hunting. I'd like to say thanks to Representative Hemshoot and the group for putting this forward. And let's prioritize Alaska residents' use of our resources. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you very much, Ellen. We appreciate your testimony. Is there any other testifiers online, Zach? Okay. Is there anyone else wishing to testify in the room? Okay, seeing none, I will now close public testimony on House Bill 201. And we will hold HB 201 in committee for further consideration. So in closing today, is there any other business before the committee? Okay, seeing none, our next committee meeting will be on Monday, January 29th at 1 o'clock. I wish you all have a great weekend, and thank you for your attention. We are now adjourned at 2:04 p.m.